This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps a sin flood of statism out of your brains.
It's true. I've got a clean bill of health. No statism over here.
Deans. So, Davy Barker.
Yes, Michael Dean.
You've returned from the train of doom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't that much of a train of doom. It was more of a train of delay.
Well, every train is a train of delay. It's just kind of a matter of degrees, isn't it?
Well, in that it's slower than driving.
In that it takes some time to get from point A to point B.
That's true.
Every mode of travel is delayed until
it's true. Until it's instantaneous.
Star Trek.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah. Yep. So we are on day three of our all zombies all the times, and this is the day of the worms episode. Yep. And I'll just start by saying two things. One is Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist, and his feet stink. Okay, we got that out of the way.
And he's a zombie.
He's a zombie. A scary thought of like the kind of how when America goes to the Middle East, they leave a bunch of like radioactive, depleted uranium is not radioactive, but it's far more poisonous than lead, and it just like kills people and causes birth defects for generations.
It's not radioactive. I thought it was.
No, not really.
House has lied to me.
It's barely radioactive. The radioactivity is not what harms you with depleted uranium. It's like basically having something far more toxic than lead just lying around everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what does it. I was thinking about this, how presidents like leave their toxic fluff in the environment for decades. Barack Obama has appointed over 300 federal judges. You know what kind of federal judges Barack Obama appoints?
Socialist ones?
Yeah, socialist ones that think that all guns should be illegal and, you know, that like you need written consent every night to have sex with your married spouse or it's
in writing, yeah.
Or it's rape.
Notarized.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying that people should be able to just have sex with their wives, even if they say no. I'm saying like, I think there are judges that Obama put in that, you know, if they're like saying, yeah, I want it, you still have to get it in writing. That's what
get
I think.
This. I saw a post today where a woman was asking for legal advice about how to essentially accuse her ex-boyfriend of rape. And her reasoning was that she had consensual sex with him under the promise that he would marry her. And then when he found out that she was cheating on him, he left her. And therefore, he is not going to marry her. And therefore, he had sex with her under false pretenses and therefore rape.
Yeah, that's not rape. That would be, if anything, I think that would be a civil contract issue.
Right. But like this is the way that I mean, this is not rare. People do come up with these bizarre sort of interpretations of classical crimes, right?
Yeah. Well, there's actually I don't want to get very far into the whole feminism versus men's rights, ultra feminism versus men's rights activists argument, because both of them have some things right and both of them are mostly wrong, and most of them just spend all their time screeching at the other one. They're kind of like Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah,
in that sense. But there's actually a company, I've seen this, somebody sent me this link one time to horrify me. There's a company that sells engagement rings that are really cheap, that look like they're not cheap, like they're fake gold or something, and they're like, I don't know, $8 each or something.
Okay.
And they provide them to men to give to women under false pretenses to say they're going to marry them so they'll sleep with them.
Intriguing.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess buyer beware?
Yeah.
I don't know.
This really has nothing to do with zombies, but I got one more non-zombie related thing. I was thinking about this thing. I was watching The Worst Wing, which is what my wife calls The West Wing, which is, you know, I talk about like I watch cop shows sometimes because they have the best writing and generally, and it requires a lot of suspension of statism. If you, I mean, cop shows are like anarchist compared to The West Wing. The West Wing is a show with stirring patriotic music about the glory of like the one good Democrat president who always helps everybody and always solves everyone's problems. But, you know, it's
basically, I don't think I could stomach it.
I just pretend it's, you know, any other like office comedy, dramedy, you know, it takes place in an office. The office happens to be the White House, but
it's an oval office, but whatever.
Well, there's other offices around his office where things happen. And that's the interesting parts. But I was thinking about this, you know, how there's the without naming names, there's like the argument in libertarianism of like how far the non-aggression principle goes and whether it's ethical. You know, is it ethical to shoot someone who breaks into your house and steals your TV? And I'm like, yeah, because if they're breaking into your house, they're probably willing to kill you. Okay, is it ethical to shoot somebody if they've stolen your TV, you're coming home and they're on the yard running away? And like, well, I don't know, maybe in Texas. You know, and there's all these arguments down to like, well, if you believe one thing, if you're consistent, you know, taking it down to, you know, you can shoot somebody for stealing a paperclip and you can shoot a little girl for wandering 2 feet onto your property and picking some weeds or daisies. And
what if it's the zombie apocalypse? What if they broke into your house to get away from a herd of zombies?
Here's the thing I'm thinking, like, even the fact that that discussion exists totally disgusts a lot of statists. They're like, no, none of that's ethical. How can you even think that? But the most extreme end of that, that like you can legally shoot somebody if they step a foot on your property, is what happens at the White House every time, man. Somebody jumps onto the White House fence, they shoot them, they tackle them.
Well, not every time. There was that guy recently that made it like all the way into the inner sanctum of the White House and everybody just thought someone else would take care of it.
Yeah. You don't have to abandon your post to abandon your post. You know, when they hire anybody, when they try to raise the bar for everybody with like socialist hiring practices and hire people not on merit, but on like, well, she's a left-handed Lithuanian single lesbian mother. We have to, you know, with one arm, we have to hire her. You end up with people who can't, who basically abandon their post while they're sitting at their post.
Yeah.
Like when Nima was in Mexico and like, you know, like coming into America, he said that, you know, they really like were searching him and everything. And going into Mexico is like, it was some lady with her feet up, like one person in a little hot dog stand kiosk, like tweeting and just like waved him through without looking at him.
I almost prefer that from a bureaucrat though.
Mm-hmm, me too. But I'm saying that's probably what happened at the White House, you know, was just,
sure.
You know, they used to hire the cream of the crop of people who, you know, West Point graduates with high marks to work at the White House. And now it's like, oh, what is it in that movie? Idiocracy. You ever seen that movie?
Yeah. What is what in that movie?
Oh, I was thinking about the, some of the cabinet positions there, like the head of the Department of Agriculture is like a 14-year-old kid who won the position on a TV contest.
Oh yeah. And there was something like they won in a Cracker Jack box or something.
Yeah.
Oh no. That was the Schwartz from Spaceballs.
Oh, okay.
That I was thinking about you were talking about rings and fake rings and things like that. Did you ever see Spaceballs?
I have really worked hard to avoid ever seeing that film.
All right. Well, let's not Isn't talk that about
Chris
it.
Chris Farley?
No, it's Mel Brooks. It's
hit or miss, man.
I think he's hit every time. But okay.
Blazing Saddles is an amazing movie, and and I don't know, that kind of like Trading Places type Down and Out in Beverly Hills kind of movie. That's not, neither of those are the name of it, but he made one where like a homeless guy and a rich guy trade places for some reason that wasn't very
good.
That
was Mel Brooks. It was
I'm not talking about the Eddie Murphy movie. I said of that type. Like he made fish out of water, rich guy and poor guy, trade places. Yeah.
Interesting. Eliza. I wonder why I haven't seen that one. I wrote like a 10-page paper on that type of movie when I was in college.
I mean, it basically goes back to the rain in Spain stays mainly on the plain. My Fair Lady. I mean, that's the archetype for that.
You've got it exactly right. That's probably the first one. Or
does it go back to Pygmalion? No, that's Sunny.
Well, it goes back to the Pauper and the King or whatever the fairy tale is.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I think we need some new fairy tales. I think we need some voluntarist fairy tales that are as good as the other ones. You know, the thing is, not all of the classic ones that we learned as a kid are that good.
Yeah, you know, they also mutate over time, right? So like Grimm's fairy tales, the original ones are these sort of brutal, like anti-child terror stories.
Yes, they are.
And then like Disney gets a hold of them and makes them into like weird kind of like they're pushing a weird kind of social message that's different than the original story, but they're like hijacking the popularity of the original story and then copywriting it.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think the same thing about monsters too. There's really only a handful of really classic monsters, and it seems like it takes a lot of work and a lot of creativity to come up with a new one, but it can be done, right? Because like Mary Shelley came up with Frankenstein.
And now, so, I was going to say, like, you know, there's three monsters now and they're all variations of them. There's basically like Dracula, Frankenstein, and what's the other? Werewolf.
Wolfman.
I mean, those aren't, that's simplifying to say that's it, but that's about, you know, 50% of the things on Sci-Fi Channel fit into one of those three. And yeah, pandemics.
Even when people come up with new stuff, they always seem to be variants of that. Like there's a vampire show out now that's like trying not to be a vampire show. They're like weird mutant snake things, but they're totally vampires.
There's a 30 Rock where they're like Jack is trying to tank the network and he's making all these horrible shows, and there's a trailer for one. It's like, if you like sexy vampires, you'll love Hunchbacks. You know, it's like one of those kind of Teen Wolf, like, you know, vampires going to high school kind of thing, but they're hunchbacks and they're not attractive. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think, one of the redeeming qualities of zombies is that they are never going to be glittery teen idols monsters. Yeah. Like,
some of the zombies are pretty good looking in Walking Dead.
Do tell. What are you talking about?
You can tell that the actors playing them are passable-looking people. Yeah.
Well, yeah, attractive people get infected, too. I mean, like...
aren't zombies just a Frankenstein variant? I mean, kind of big, lumbering...
No, I don't think so. So, this is sort of interesting in the, like, kind of taxonomic classification of monsters.
A guide to recognizing your monster saints. Yeah.
So, like, from a biological standpoint, absolutely. Like Frankenstein, I think, is technically called like a revenant or something.
The living dead. Yeah. Made from
he's the living dead. He's a reanimated corpse. He's even green. Like a lot of zombies are green. But the reason he's not a zombie is because there's only one of him. Right. So the theme with zombies is that the village is coming after the individual. Whereas with Frankenstein, the monster is the individual.
Yeah. And with Frankenstein, the village is the villain, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's good. Although, doesn't he kill a kid by accident?
Yeah.
After he plays with the kid.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
So I have a I was wrong. I said, right. Yeah, it's a simple one. I was when the episode with you and I and MK at one point, I called Walking Dead Breaking Bad, and MK corrected me, but like 5 minutes later, like she's too new to the show to know she can and should just boldly interrupt me like you do and tell me when I'm wrong. So, yeah, I did that.
I was wrong, too.
Good.
So I have this book called Antagonists, and it's essentially like a guidebook for like creating monsters for horror stories.
Yeah.
And there's a whole section on the living dead and all the different kinds of living dead that there are. And that's why I said Frankenstein is technically a revenant, but he's not. He's an imbued. So an imbued is a body that is brought back to life through magic or science, usually compiled of other body parts, right? So that's Frankenstein on its face, right? A revenant is when a ghost possesses a dead human body and brings it back to life. And so zombies can sort of technically be either one, but usually they're imbued, or usually they're a virus now. But anyway, the reason I don't think that Frankenstein is a monster is because he's not a democratic or he's not a zombie is because he's not democratic about it. So what makes zombies unique amongst all of the monsters is that they outnumber the survivors, right? Like they're the democratic monster. They're the will of the majority, or the tyranny of the majority, coming after the lone well-armed survivors, right?
Yeah.
And so it doesn't work. The theme of the collective versus the individual is reversed with Frankenstein.
Hey, I'm looking for something. If any fans are listening and know where to find this thing, it's something I don't even know what to search to find this. It's the thing that Nima Vedati and I talked about a couple years ago. It's the handout that U.S. soldiers going to the Middle East are given that folds out, and it's got like two-sided printed four color, and it describes the different types of peoples, you know, religious, ethnic, national, tribal differences, and it's the handout guide to, like, you know, travel the world, meet unusual people, kill them or enslave them, that kind of thing. But it's a really informative thing, and I wanted to show it to Davi, and I can't find it. So drop me an email at tuckback@freedomfiends.com if you know what that thing is or where to find it.
It sounds almost like a travel blog or something. Like, is it the type of thing that you would give somebody traveling to that country tourist reasons?
Exactly. Except if tourists had to know in five different languages how to say, put your hands in the air and get on your knees. And also how to say basically some variation of, I'm from the United States and I'm here to help you.
Right.
Yeah. It's that thing. If anybody knows what that is, because it's it is actually, but a lot of it's pretty accurate and useful, and they tried best as they could to like keep any kind of anything controversial or wrong or, you know, politically incorrect out of it. But the fact that it exists is kind of like, yeah, here's a guide to recognizing your future friends and enemies as the, you know, commander in chief decides every week which one is which.
Interesting.
Yeah. So zombies.
Yeah, zombies. So, I think, and we talked about this yesterday, that the reason that Walking Dead and zombies in general is so popular is because there's this looming sense of inevitability about it. And I think it's deeper than that, and I think it's worse than that, and that is that it's not just inevitable, it's already happened. Like in my view, essentially, democracy is a zombie apocalypse. It's the transition from a rights-respecting culture to a democratic tyranny.
Describe the meme we used yesterday about what is democracy.
Oh, democracy is 1,000 zombies and a sheriff deciding on dinner.
Yeah, and it's a picture from the show Walking Dead that is our hero, who was a sheriff before, you know, the government
saw the light.
And he's in his sheriff's outfit, and he's riding a horse into Atlanta to try to get supplies. And it's basically, you know, he's surrounded by a crowd of zombies trying to eat the horse and him. And there's an old saying.
And they do eat the horse.
Yeah, there's an old saying. Democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what to have for dinner. And yeah.
And a Ricktatorship is a well-armed sheriff disputing the vote.
A Ricktatorship. And his name is Rick. Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, that's the thing. Like the sort of civics lesson we're taught in school about the majoritarian ethic is perfectly obeyed by the zombies. Like, they outnumber you, you know, from each according to their ability to each according to their need, right? And they need you more than you do.
Yeah. So. I'm always amazed at right-wingers upset that left-wingers are gaining what seems like a permanent market share, because that's how democracy works.
Yeah. You know,
when people are taught they can vote instead of work for a living, over a period of time, it just turns into that and collapses. Happened in Greece. All right.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defooed yet. Because if we don't laugh, the status win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those who easily rustle jimmies. Consult a physician if you experience dropping blood pressure or laughter last longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
So Davi, our Middle East correspondent was unable to get his crack research team to know the answer. So we still don't know the answer. And yeah, he asked his wife. She didn't know. My wife loves that I do this show. And
you know, neither of us are Middle Eastern.
Yeah, I know. but she knows about things.
Yeah, that's true. She does.
Yep. She's unlike most people living in America who think they only need to know about America and not much about that. Some people are more worldly than others and know things. Some people have been outside of America, and I don't mean Toronto, yeah, or Tijuana. I have. Davi has. You know, most people that say America's the greatest country in the world have never been to another country. And I'm not saying America's not a great place with wonderful natural features and some cool people, but the whole world is amazing, man. Really is.
Yeah. I've been to a lot of it.
Yeah. No, I've never been in the Middle East. I've been all over Europe.
I've never been to Europe, but I've been all over the Middle East.
Have you traveled much in America? I guess you go to conventions all the time, but you just go to a convention center, right? In a hotel.
Yeah, you know, it's like I'm sort of starting to cross off the states I visited, but a lot of the times it's like I'm just in the airport or I'm just in a hotel. Yeah. Or
that's kind of how it was being in a rock band. It was like you would see, you know, a bar and then somebody's couch you were sleeping on, and then that's what you saw of a city.
Right. Although we make sort of an effort, if I'm traveling with my wife, we make kind of an effort to check out the downtown or check out the like local restaurants. Especially we use what is it? Coinmap.org.
I knew it was going to be some app that, when you said we use blank.
No, it's a website. Coinmap, not app. Coinmap.org. It's a listing. It's sort of like a Yelp listing of all the places that take Bitcoin.
Oh.
And so when we travel, we sort of make an effort to frequent those places.
Is she down with the Bitcoins?
No, but she's down with
you buying dinner with Bitcoins. Yeah. My wife thought Bitcoin was like me collecting pogs or something until she
used to call it video game money.
Yeah. Until she realized that you could spend it through gift on like makeup sites.
Right.
Yeah. And shoe sites. Yeah. Which is not to say she's shallow and only likes makeup and shoes. She also really likes books and movies, and you can buy them too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sort of like the way that I broke the ice with it was I sent her flowers at work, and the card in the flowers said the flowers that Bitcoin bought.
What company does that?
It was just a gift card. I don't think there was a direct company that took it at the time. There might be now. This was over a year ago.
Oh, from gift, GYFT.com?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, GYFT. Yeah, I think they have 1-800-Flowers on there. I think I saw that one now.
That's probably what I did then.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Cool.
But yeah, as soon as you can turn it into real things, you know?
Yeah.
And I bought the first stuff I did was buy gold with it. And so once I closed that loop, it was like, all right, there's real money here if you can buy precious metals with it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. My wife's attitude about the show is she loves that I have something to do. She loves that it makes a tiny bit of money. basically it keeps me sane, and she's totally down politically with everything I'm saying. And she likes to help out and do, you know, voice on a commercial here and there. Although she's doing less of that now, now that I'm trying to get everybody else in the Fiends to voice ads, you know, cause I'm asking other people to do ads now. So, which is kind of good. Cause I think there should be as many, a variety of voices on a show. So it's not even on the ads. So, there's that, but all the kind of funny thing is like, you know, the occasional time that I've had like a day off or something, you know, like if Derek J doesn't do a show Sunday night and then I don't have a show again till Monday night, like I'm suddenly like, don't even realize it, but I'm doing the show at her in the living room. You know, I'll just like, we'll be flipping the channels on TV and we'll see some news thing and I'll just start into this rant and she'll just like look up from her book, like, okay, you know, like basically I'm forgetting, I have this need to talk for 2 hours a day and give my opinion and without anyone telling me back otherwise, and yeah, then I just start doing it as a soliloquy and it's kind of weird.
Addicted to one directional communication.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand why shows take calls, man. People are stupid. But not you, not the listeners. Yeah.
No, not our listeners. But they still know better than to call in.
They know better. They're smart. They don't try to call in. Yeah. So zombies.
Yeah, zombies. So there's also all these other sort of zombies. This is an interesting thing on the subject. Again, taxonomical classification of monsters. Zombies are relatively new. Like before Night of the Living Dead, zombies were solitary monsters. They were sort of voodoo or magic monsters. And they usually were an allegory for like slavery, right?
Yeah.
But now they're not. Like, the zombies of today are completely different than the zombies of, like, even the 80s, 70s, and 80s.
There's allegories of slavery, though, in Walking Dead. I mean, I noticed it here and there, and then all of a sudden, like, there was a character that's a black woman that has two zombies on chains. I was like, whoa, what's that?
Yeah, but I mean, like, explicitly about slavery. Like, there's a voodoo magician guy, and he is turning people into zombies to pick cotton in his plantation, right? Like, they were explicitly about slave plantations and creating a class of workers that wouldn't sort of revolt, right?
Have you heard about the zombie sex drug in South America?
No, what is a zombie sex drug?
There's a drug, it's a herbal paralytic. I forget which one it is, but I think it's scopolamine that is... This was originally thought to be urban myth, but Vice magazine did a documentary on it that seems to imply it's real, that, you know, like prostitutes will drug a John's drink with this stuff. And it basically makes you so you're unable to move any muscles in your body except your heart, and your heart slows way down. So you just kind of sit there with your eyes open like a zombie. And you're kind of in a twilight consciousness, like you don't remember it, but you're kind of conscious and can answer simple questions while you're in that state. Like, where's your wallet? What's the combination to your hotel safe? Things like that.
Okay.
And then sometimes it's, you know, it's often used for prostitutes to rob their Johns.
This sounds like what Jeffrey Dahmer was trying to achieve. He was like drilling holes in people's heads and pouring in formaldehyde and things like that. And he wanted to create essentially a sex slave that wouldn't fight back.
Ugh. Yeah, well, there's a chemical app for that now, apparently, that's used in South. It's also used to, you know, to like drag people into sex slavery. Kind of the same way. I mean, Mickey Finns were used for that. You know, the phrase being Shanghai'd, you know where that comes from, is like Seattle and Portland, you know, early 1800s. They would drug people's drinks in some bars, in these bar, like rough and tumble bars down by the docks. And they would literally have like trap doors behind the bars, and they would drug someone and then drag them behind the bar and drop them down this hole. And this series of tunnels would take them out to the shore, and they would wake up like on a merchant ship, you know, headed for another country and be forced to work.
Weird.
That's the term being Shanghai'd.
Okay, and that's real. That's not like a movie or something that really happened.
No, yeah, and it was done with coral hydrate, which is called a Mickey Finn. It's actually a drug that, you know, it used to be used by doctors as a hypnotic. It isn't used much anymore because they're, you know, barbiturates and other drugs do a much better job of it more safely for one term use. But it's a liquid that, you know, about a half about a half gram to a gram of it mixed with a drink of alcohol will make you unconscious and, you know, for many hours, but not kill you. So it was used for that back in the day.
People do also kind of use zombies for like a somnambulant state of like people that are sort of walking through life and not paying any attention to anything going on around them.
Roads.
Yeah. Like, have you seen Shaun of the Dead?
No, that looked really stupid to me. Like that came out.
I know.
But it came out when I hated zombies and I was like, okay, that looks even dumber. A parody of something I hate. I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so they're sort of poking fun at the idea of people waking up and having a morning routine and being buried in their cell phone and never looking at the world, right? And so before the zombie outbreak, everyone's already acting like zombies.
Well, and, go ahead.
Well, that, I mean, that's just one of the metaphors, right? The idea of a brainless person just sort of meandering through life.
Well, I think the really classic one of that I love is They Live. The movie They Live, the one with the glasses that when you put them on, you can see, you know,
oh yeah,
see the skulls of the lizard people running the government in the world and consuming and like.
Now that's an alien invasion, right?
Kind of, but
they are kind of zombie like.
They are kind of zombie like.
Yeah,
yeah, and the leaders do, but especially the citizens. You know, the citizens in that are just kind of like consume. You know, and
yeah.
Like when you put on the glasses, they call them the Hoffman glasses, and the doctor who makes them is Dr. Hoffman, which is probably an allusion to LSD because the scientist who invented LSD accidentally while trying to make something else was Albert Hoffman at the Sandoz Pharmaceutical Company in Switzerland. He invented it in 1939, but didn't discover the effects till 1943. And so in this movie, the Hoffman glasses are these glasses that the underground are making that when you put them on, they look like black sunglasses, but when you put them on, you can see the world for what it really is. And like, you know, you open up a magazine full of celebrities and everything. And instead of having all the color pictures and all the different text, it just has text, block text, black on white on each page, yeah. Like obey, consume, you know, reproduce, buy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was good stuff.
That's kind of a zombie thing too. And like the weapon of choice against them is a shotgun, which is kind of an old school zombie thing.
Yeah. You know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers was about aliens, and it was kind of a zombie movie, too.
Well, doesn't it take place in a mall?
Invasion of the Body
Snatchers?
Which
the one that takes place in
a small 50s town.
Okay.
The mall is Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, but that's a reference to consumerism.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so Romero was trying to force consumerism into the zombie metaphor, and so he kind of had to do things to make that point because it isn't sort of native to the metaphor. And so he would always put zombies in shopping malls and make zombies do kind of stupid consumer things.
Yeah.
But no, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, it's like pod people. Like people are replaced and they're sort of like Stepford Wives kind of thing. But it is sort of an invasion.
Did you know that that movie there's a dog with it? You know the one with the human face on it? The human face is Jerry Garcia.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, what movie is that?
Invasion of the Body Snatchers. The original Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, okay. So it must have been a reference to something in Mars Attacks. Is that the idea?
I don't know. Didn't I think Body Snatchers was first, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, Mars Attacks is like a campy 90s thing, right?
Yeah. Basically, the Body Snatchers is from the 50s.
Yeah. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends. All zombies, all the time.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
I'm going to start just recording. I'm going to start just recording our between commercial banter and playing it back when it's as good as that was. Man,
yeah, I got another. I was wrong, although I wasn't totally wrong. I'm just so I was talking about Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which is about sort of an alien invasion of pod people that sort of they absorb people and turn them into obedient.
An alien invasion of podcasters. Yeah.
And it's sort of considered a proto zombie movie, right? Because it's not actually about zombies, but it does have that sort of like the neighborhood is being taken over by a mass of people.
Yeah.
But the other movie that I was thinking about was Plan 9 from Outer Space, which is another alien invasion movie that's considered kind of a proto zombie movie. Because in that movie, the aliens are going to attack Earth by resurrecting our dead and turning them against us. And so it is kind of zombies, yeah, right? But it's this Elvira woman, this vamp woman that you were talking about. Vampira is the actress. And so it's like she's kind of a vampire. She's kind of a zombie. They call
her kind of a femme fatale. Yeah.
Yeah. But she does like rise from the grave and kind of come at you.
Well, I have a couple theories here. One is that, well, it's not a theory. Okay. First of all, I was wrong. In that same episode with MK Lords last week, I also said, and MK corrected me like 4 minutes later. And again, MK, if you're listening, we love having you on the show, but you can and should interrupt me when I'm straight up wrong and just say the wrong words. I called Antigone's, podcast. I called it, Sex Lies and Videotape. It's called Sex Lies and Anarchy. So there.
Oh yeah. Yep. There you go.
Yep. So
Sex Lies and Videotape is a documentary or something, no, right?
It's a drama, I think. Okay. But, people should go see the movie Ed Wood, about the director Ed Wood. It's a biopic starring Johnny Depp, and it's great. And it really gives you a feel for the Ed Wood, who has been dubbed the worst director of all time, but actually has been, for the past 20 years or so, has really had a kind of camp resurgence of people who watch his films because they're so bad it's funny. And he had a lot of things about, like, vampire strippers rising from the dead in the graveyard and dancing. You know, he made a bunch of low budget movies. He also tried to make some movies that had meaning, and he just wasn't a very good filmmaker, but he made a bunch of films like kind of on the periphery of Hollywood and was never really appreciated. But yeah, he was into the vamps. And I have a theory too, is that the style of clothing and dress and makeup for women that goes along with the goth culture, I think it was created by Lydia Lunch, the performance artist, musician, filmmaker, actress. I think it was created by her. Like, she was kind of the head of that, you know, like the outstanding model of that in the 70s and early 80s. And I think she got it from watching Addams Family, with the original one on TV, because what's Morticia? Morticia.
Well, when was Addams Family on? When did it air?
It was current when I was a kid, and I'm 50. So, you know, another kind of zombie that's not zombie movie is Stepford Wives from 1975.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's another thing of like trying to create compliant, not just sex slaves, but compliant, like submissive wives that, you know, do the shopping. I mean, a compliant, like, drugged sex slave couldn't do the shopping. Like, it was about creating, you know, wives.
There's also Disturbing Behavior, which is pretty much the same. It's a remake of the Stepford Wives, but it's about high school, and it's about these kids who become part of the Blue Ribbons, and that means that they've been, like, brainwashed, or they've been microchipped and made into these compliant, perfect high school students.
Oh, the TV series was 1964 to 1966. So I guess I was watching it.
Vampira's got you beat. Vampira's from 1959.
Yeah, but I wasn't watching it. But I never knew who Vampira was until like 10 years ago. So this was the pop culture initiation to me. So I was not watching current ones, but I was watching ones that were, you know, when I was 5 to 10, I was watching it. And I was, you know, I was 2 when it finished. So I was watching ones that were 3 years old to, you know, a few years older than that, and thinking that when I was a kid, I didn't really have a sense of like, this is the new latest episode, and this is a repeat of a show that's no longer being made. It was just kind of like, TV, stories and words and people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be back for hour two with the history of zombies and everything in between, with Davi Barker from shinybadges.com,
Worms,
and Michael Dean from freedomfiends.com. And yeah, man, we're all fiends here, and it's all tangents all the time. So we will bring you some well-researched tangents that we will research in the next 6 minutes. We will go into the desert and return with new knowledge. All right, I'm messing with the board op. He keeps thinking I'm done, and I keep talking, and he keeps turning it down and up. I'm a hard guy to op, I'll tell you that. And thank you for your service, Daniel. Worms.
Worms.
Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at TrueShibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. TrueShibes.com.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Worms.
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 Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Worms. Dobby Barker, did you know that the name Elvira is a Germanic or West Gothic origin word, which means alert or trustworthy?
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although, I don't know. Is she alert or trustworthy?
I don't know. Oh, Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, a character portrayed by Cassandra Peterson in television and film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit with Vampira. It was a, you know, trademark issue or something. Or,
well, Vampira definitely predates Elvira.
Yeah.
Because Vampira is the woman from Plan 9 from Outer Space in 1959.
Man. You know, I think that Ed Wood wanted to get her, but couldn't, and got Elvira instead. I could be remembering that wrong, but...
There's also a whole bunch of, like, Elvira impersonators throughout the movie, because she kind of became a character in and of herself, and it grew beyond her as an actress, and so she became, like, a trope in other horror movies.
Yeah.
So, like, the first place I came across it was a character named Medusa in the movie Terror Vision.
Man, I'm looking at a picture of the actress Cassandra in 2001 when she was 60. She's hot. She's a hot old lady.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cassandra She's still Peterson. Alive? Apparently Vampira is no longer alive.
Yeah, because this is Cassandra Peterson at, like, Comic-Con or something. Phoenix Comic-Con. Yeah, in 2011. Yeah.
Well, good for her.
Yeah. Well, her character, too, had kind of, like, talked. Kind of Valley Girl too. That was the
interesting thing about her. Yeah, she was kind of dumb in those movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
So yeah, that's there's the gothic archetype for sure.
So this is the thing, like,
there's a takeoff on her in The Simpsons whose name is Booberella.
Well, that's a fitting name, probably more than alert and trustworthy. But so,
and, you know, she was trying to look like Sharon Tate in Fearless Vampire Killers, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, there's this sort of this morphology between vampires and zombies, like realistically zombies came from vampires and they sort of like, they're the uglier sort of less discriminate version of them. Right. And, in these movies in the 50s and 60s, like before Night of the Living Dead, they were actually like rising from their graves. Like it wasn't a virus. It wasn't anything like that, but there were only like maybe one or two, and they were all slave characters or alien invasion characters, or occasionally radioactivity characters.
Or occasionally they feed on radio personalities like in Pontypool.
Yeah. That is a trope we've established. There's three of them. So it's a trope.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like the zombie like comes from essentially the combination of this like voodoo monster from cinema and the vampires from I Am Legend.
Yeah, you know, but vampires too, there's always like I like that you said the zombies are the indiscriminate version of vampires, because you know, vampires in a sense do feed on human flesh in that they drink blood. But there's often kind of a romantic component to it. There's nothing at all romantic about the zombies in Walking Dead.
Yeah, no, nothing at all. There is one attempt at a romantic zombie, and they called it a zomcom, and it was Warm Bodies, which is this sort of, it's Romeo and Juliet. The zombie's name is R because he can't remember his whole name, and the woman's name is Julia, and they do like, there's the humans and the zombies and they're star-crossed lovers and love redeems him from his zombie infection, but it just doesn't work. You can't make corpses pretty, right? But so in I Am Legend, they are vampires. Like that's the word he uses. They are intelligent. They have a culture. But in the beginning of the outbreak, and that's the other thing, it's an outbreak. They behave like we conventionally think of zombies. And George Romero said that that's what gave him inspired him to change the movie zombie into these hordes. Right.
The horde is always part of the trope now. Like he built that and it really caught on.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. That one's his. But it's morphing the vampires of I Am Legend. And what was unique about I Am Legend was that the vampires outnumbered the survivors. It wasn't one vampire or a little brood of vampires. It was everybody except for the main character.
You know, I've thought about the zombie to human ratio in Walking Dead. Is that something that comes up in the fan blogs?
Yeah, there's actually an official number. It's like 1 to 5,000. That's what the director has said, or that's what the studio has said. I don't know where they came up with that.
It seems about right. Well, maybe from what they show on screen, because at one point they actually show, I'm sure this is digitally created, but they show, you know, like a countywide horde up in the distance at one point.
Are you talking about the horde where Abraham and Eugene stop?
Yeah.
So this is a problem with Walking Dead is sometimes you have to watch Talking Dead to know what happened because they actually explain some of the things that happened in the show. And they said that was a slaughterhouse, that there was essentially abandoned cattle, and the existence of abandoned cattle attracted all these zombies. And so what was once a ranch became a humongous horde
of feeding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, mammals go where the food is, and zombies are a primitive form of mammals in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, we've discussed that. They have hair, but they probably don't feed their young with mammillary glands.
Functioning mammary glands, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There have been a couple other large hordes in the show. Like when they go to the veterinary college to get medicine, there's that big herd there. But they never really do anything with it.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, you know, you think about it. What are there, 6 billion people in the world now? 6.5, something like that. I don't even know. It's, you know, it's doubled in my lifetime. That's kind of scary. But
you know how many zombies just sort of like walked off into the Grand Canyon or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, like
and some people were killed by the government, you know, thousands, but probably not millions. They probably,
you know what they call them? You remember there's the episode where you have all the melted zombies who are the victims of the napalm that the government did?
Yeah.
They were calling them streetwalkers.
Oh man. Well, some of them were, there's also some zombies where there were not, napalm attacks. Like I think at Terminus, there are some that are like, kind of like the bicycle girl, but the bicycle lady, but melted, you know, they're like just an upper half kind of like melting into the ground. What's that from? Fire?
I don't know. It's probably either fire or napalm. Yeah. Well, there was fire at Terminus.
Yeah.
Or maybe the chemical spill, or who knows? I don't know. Maybe they got hit by a car cut in half.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's a few places I remember where they show more than one of them. Or you could, you know, it could have been a bus, you know, a car ran through a crowd of them or something, but zombies.
Or it could even just be that like that's all that's left after they get attacked.
Oh, zombies.
I mean, that's sort of like, this has always kind of confused me about zombies to some extent, is if you have a horde and they attack a person, they eat so much of that person can't get up and walk around. So where do all the zombies that can get up and walk around come from?
Well, that's where I was kind of going at with the zombie math. I wonder at some point down the line in this world of Walking Dead, if the zombies would be gone. I mean, I guess everyone who dies becomes a zombie if they're not punched in the head with a blunt, sharp object. But I guess people who are living would know to do that to their loved ones when they die. But would there come a time when people would rise again and zombies would be eradicated, or will there just always be more zombies? And how long do zombies, I don't know if live is the word, but stay mobile in that world?
How long do they walk around if they don't eat, right? Yeah. Well, you remember Milton, when Milton and the governor apprehended Michonne and her pets, the governor asks Milton, why don't they starve? Why don't they decompose?
And he says, they are slower
than us. And this is only like a year, maybe 2 years into the outbreak. So if there's an observable decay at that range of time, I mean, what do they have, a decade? Maybe less, maybe, I don't know. So yeah, eventually they have to, I mean, simply to the fact that like they're not healing, right?
Yeah.
So at some point they've walked so long that their legs disintegrate. Do they
sleep?
No.
Do they sit down?
No, they just walk forever.
Yeah. Well, if you walk forever too, you know, there's the differences in zombie physiology from the human physiology, but some of it would be the same. I mean, if you walked forever without resting, even if you ate enough to have the fuel to do it, your organs would fail and your muscles would fail from lactic acid. And, you know, do they go to the bathroom?
No.
Yeah. You would just die. You would just poison.
Well, this is
your body.
The other thing is they don't blink. So, there's this sort of part of zombie school on The Walking Dead is the actors are not supposed to blink while they're on camera. And sometimes they have to CGI it out so that it's that, but the zombies never blink. Now, your eyes would dry out and fall out. They would dry out and fall out, but also you would get so many like scratches and dust and particles.
Yeah.
You would be blind after a while. So zombies would have to be virtually blind in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting that this thing has evolved in movie culture and TV culture, and especially with the internet allowing everyone to yell at each other all the time, of where there are these unbelievably fantastical, you know, unbelievable scenarios, and then people talk about the science of them and whether they're getting it right or not. that's what we're doing.
That's comic book culture all over, right? Like, that's like Thor's hammer, right? Thor's hammer won't move unless Thor's the one picking it up. And it's like, well, what if it's floating in space? What if you pick up the table that
and
Thor's
these are the kind of questions
on,
that, right? that these are the kind of questions that 30-year-old guys with no girlfriends who live with their mothers spend their time having on the internet.
Except that we're married.
Well, it's kind of new to me to be having these conversations. It's something they make fun of all the time in comedy, like in The Simpsons. You know, they go to a comic convention and nerds are having like heated arguments over the physics of Thor's hammer and things like that.
It's a big deal, man. Like the kinds of things that people will argue about in the zombie culture is hilarious. Like there are people that don't want to acknowledge 28 days later as zombies because they're infected. And so they come up with this new term called the infected. And they're like, they're not real zombies because they didn't have a clinical death. Right. And so.
But would those people say that the Walking Dead zombies are because they had both?
Yeah. Because the Walking Dead zombies die, and we've seen people get bitten and then die and then come back.
Okay, whereas, so to really be a zombie, you have to die. You can't just be compromised.
Well, I'm a moderate. I'm a broad definition person.
You're a liberal, not a conservative in this fight.
Yes, exactly. Essentially, if you're hungry for human flesh, you're a zombie.
Worms.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Worms.
I just did what I get mad when co-hosts do. I don't do it much, but...
Too busy talking to do a talk radio show.
Too busy talking to do a talk radio show. Yeah. Let's see. I was reading about the actor who played Lurch, and he worked at Luby's Cafe in Dallas. And then I said that that Luann Platter on King of the Hill is named after the Luann Platter, which is a dish served at Luby's. And there was a mass shooting at Luby's in the 70s, in 1991, where in Killeen, Texas, where a guy crashed his pickup truck through the plate glass windows and started shooting people. And that's a big one for the gun rights, us gun rights activists, because there was a lady in there who was an accomplished shot who had a gun and a concealed carry permit, and she'd left her gun in the car, in her truck, because at that point in time, you couldn't bring guns into restaurants that served alcohol. So she testified before Congress, and yeah, it was a big thing. It's a big deal. It was the third deadliest mass shooting in America behind Sandy Hook and the Virginia Tech shootings.
Crazy.
Yeah, I don't understand why anybody would want to kill a bunch of people. It's ridiculous.
I think they're crazy is usually the reason.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've never asked them. So, you know, unless they leave a manifesto, it's hard to tell.
I blame the government. I really do.
Yeah.
You know why I blame the government? Because even when people are crazy, they don't usually do mass violence. But I think that the reason people grow up doing violent things, for the most part, a lot of it, you know, maybe 40 or 50% of it, is people are confused by what's right and wrong. And I'm not talking in a like Rush Limbaugh, like these kids today don't know what's right and wrong, because my solution for teaching kids what's right and wrong would horrify Rush Limbaugh. It's basically legalize drugs, because when drugs are illegal and cracked down on like terrorism, you know, with guys in masks and body armor kicking in doors, people get the impression that the government doesn't know what it's doing. And when every teenager in America has either smoked pot or has a friend who has smoked pot and knows that it doesn't make you crazy and it shouldn't be horribly illegal, the fact that it's horribly illegal makes them think, well, you know, shoplifting's less of a punishment than smoking pot, so there's nothing.
It must be less severe of a crime. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really think that gets pushed along the continuum to with crazy people to murdering a bunch of people in a restaurant is nothing wrong with it, you know? So I blame the government.
I blame the government because without the government, there wouldn't be any target-rich environments.
Because there'd be guns everywhere. Yeah, the only...
It's the herds of people. Free people want elbow room. They like to spread out. They like to have large amount of sort of property to sort of like do their home little kitsch projects on and things like that. The government is the thing that's constantly herding people into these target rich environments so that like all your kids are in one building.
Yeah,
can you imagine that happening in a free market, that all of the kids in an entire county are in one building? Like, that doesn't make any sense at all. The TSA, right? Like all of the travelers from all of the planes are in one line. There's no way that would ever happen in a free market. Like, so yeah, that's, there would be no place to go and do a mass shooting, because there would be no masses of people.
Well,
they would all be out doing their own little thing with their friends.
There would still be masses of people, but there'd probably be people who are armed at them too. I mean, there wouldn't be as many masses of people, but are you saying that in a libertarian paradise, in LibPair, Comic-Con would just go away and just go to the internet? No.
I don't know.
No, we'd all be.
I got some thoughts about conventions. Conventions are incredibly hierarchical.
We'd all be flying to them in our flying cars. Okay, talk about conventions.
Well, so this is something I've noticed going to Walker Stalker Con and some of these other ones is, you go to Liberty Forum and it's a very, it's a whole horizontal status, to whatever extent, there's fandom or there's, any kind of social hierarchy, it's because you've imposed that on yourself and you've turned this person into a celebrity, but they're going to the same restaurant as you and they're in the same hallway as you, and you can walk up to them and talk to them if you want to. When you go to these fan conventions, it's like there are all these badges. There's the general admission badge and the weekend badge and the celebrity badge and the after hours hangout badge. And there's all these different degrees of separation between everybody. And it just feels very hierarchical. You can't really go up and socialize with the people at these conventions. They're all sort of behind a curtain and behind a security guard. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it feels it's not a state because it's all voluntary and people bought their ticket and agreed to the terms of service, but it is a mindset of hierarchy in a lot of these conventions. And I'm sure that's there to protect the celebrities, But I think in a free society, there would be less of that.
You know, I only ever went to one of them, and it was the Podcasting Expo in Southern California in 2006. My wife and I went for our first wedding anniversary, and it was non-hierarchical because it was podcasting, and, like, you know, there weren't really any stars yet, except Adam Curry pulled up in a limousine.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Hey, this is Squisgar Squigelts from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Everything looks good on my end, by the way.
Worms. This is the Freedom Fiends. We have a message to, go ahead and
the world.
Go ahead and talk, Javi. I'm going to take this phone call. Yes, you're on speakerphone. You're on speakerphone. Go ahead, Ian.
There's definitely Howard Stern audio coming through here. So something's up.
Okay, from the GCN feed?
I'll email you. See
ya. All right, thanks, man. Yeah, for some reason, there's Howard Stern playing. I don't know what's up, but...
So apparently the Fiends takes calls in an emergency.
Yeah, we do. We take them from people that have control over our feed. All right. So worms, and thank you, Nathan the Ninja Squirrel, for alerting us to that. We like to give one-to-one secret mess. No, they're not secret. It's actually illegal to give a secret message over radio if you're not the government. So I want to make it clear I'm responding to a fan email from Nathan the Ninja Squirrel letting us know that, some feed somewhere was playing something other than us as well as us. So
how do they know if you've sent a secret message over the radio?
Well, you cannot use encryption over the radio. I know that.
Okay. But I just said, you know, the eagle has landed at midnight or whatever, and that means something to somebody, but...
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. You know what that is?
It's true.
You know what that's from?
No.
It's from Red Dawn.
Oh, okay.
It's the secret messages over the radio in Red Dawn.
But how would they know? How do they know? I want to talk about Terminus.
All right. Explain what Terminus is and how horrible it is.
So, essentially, at the end of season 4 of The Walking Dead, everybody is like on the railroad tracks headed toward Terminus. And Terminus is the original name of Atlanta before it was called Atlanta.
Was it really?
But it's also, yeah.
Huh.
But it's also Terminus, meaning where the train tracks terminate, yeah. Right? Like it's the hub of all of the train tracks. So all roads lead to Terminus, and Terminus is supposedly the sanctuary. Well, in the beginning of season 5, and you kind of know by the end of season 4.
Keep talking. I got to check something. Keep talking.
You find out that Terminus is run by cannibals, and all these signs that say that they're sanctuary at the end of the railroads is just sort of like it's a trap to lead people in. And so season 5, in the beginning at least, is about dealing with these cannibals because they've all been taken prisoner and put in this train car and all this stuff. And you kind of find out that it was a choice. Like, I mean, Rick's group didn't cooperate, but originally what happens is people are brought in and they're given this food and they're shown this community and they're shown this sanctuary. And then at some point they come to you and they tell you, oh, by the way, you know that barbecue you've been having? Well, that's people. And if you're down with that, then you can join Terminus. But if you're not, then you become food for Terminus. And So there's this thing in The Walking Dead. The funny thing about it is everybody's infected. So how do you deal with, how does a cannibal deal with the fact that all of the survivors are infected with the zombie virus? Because you would think that that would cause some digestive issues, cause some heartburn, maybe something like that. So they explore this. They hint at the idea of exploring this in an episode where they capture Bob from Rick's group and they eat him. And then they've sort of cut off his leg but kept him alive so that he doesn't become a zombie. And as they're eating his leg, he starts laughing at them and he says, "You're eating infected meat. You're eating infected meat." And this is from the comic book. It's straight word for word out of the comic book.
I have a breaking news. The crosstalk on the LRN feed was because Derek J left a channel open on the Free Talk Live mixer after doing his show. And so I told Ian to go spank Derek J for me.
But he might like that.
That's what I was saying, but Ian had just hung up to go deal
with it. I mean, I don't know if Ian is Derek J's type. He's probably not, but...
who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah.
People are into what they're into.
Yep. And life is a vast rainbow of opportunities.
It's true. Life is, it's not the journey, it's the destination, right? It's the end of the railroad tracks is starting to wrap it back around.
Yep. But I want to thank Nathan the Ninja Squirrel for alerting us of that.
Cool.
We're the kind of show, you know, and we are a teaching hospital. Like most shows would be like, that's not my problem. I'm just the guy talking. But, you know, I'm the engineer too. We have a remote board op, but he checked it on his end and it was fine. I checked the St. George, Utah feed. Because that's the one channel we're on at night that has a live feed. Well, there's one in Florida, but it has ads. And I didn't want to listen to 60 seconds of ads that always play on the streaming feed before you get to it. So I just told you, I just had you talk. And I went and checked it and made some phone calls. And we solved the problem and got back to it. And this is a teaching hospital. And that's the kind of stuff I'm trying to teach, other than getting good sound and doing good radio, is being able to keep good radio going in an emergency, you know, walking on a tightrope while doing a show and juggling hamsters. You got to be able to do that kind of stuff in the coming world of what media is going to be.
Yeah, it'll end up being kind of part of the entertainment is watching the host scramble around with his own equipment.
Did you see South Park tonight?
No, I don't watch South Park.
I don't usually watch it, but I was like just kind of waking up and drinking my coffee and was, you know, didn't have any emails, which is unusual after a nap. Nothing to catch up on. So I went out and watched it. It was basically this scenario where commenting on commenters on the internet had become the main form of entertainment. And Cartman was a star. So like you'd be watching, you know, the Grammys or the some award show, some big Hollywood award show. And like there'd be a little picture in picture window of Cartman with headphones and a microphone on, just calling everyone gay and stupid and square and old. And he was like the biggest star in the world.
So that like made him a celebrity?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Yep. It could happen.
It could happen.
I mean, people have been celebrities for less interesting things.
All right. So let's go back to the Zombie Talk Live. Where were you, man?
I was describing Terminus and I was talking about sort of how people got to the station, what was at the station.
They even had radio ads. That's kind of rare in a zombie apocalypse. Like they
Although I didn't understand why those were live. Why
I didn't either.
Pre-record that.
Absolutely. Maybe they didn't have a tape recorder. Maybe they had a radio transmitter, but no recorder. But, you know, I got to say, I distrusted Terminus from the first time I heard of it. The name, it means like place you go to be terminated.
Right.
And the idea of like in that world, a bunch of people saying, come one, come all, you know, like that's, you don't know what people, it wouldn't really work. I don't think there'd be a lot of that. Like there'd probably be still some, you know, religious charity and some people helping their neighbors, but I really don't think it would be a sustainable model to just put up signs and say, everyone come on down, because you'd be stretching, you'd be burdening whatever, you know, thin, resources you had. You don't know of the people that show up, you don't know how many of them are good at killing zombies. And, you know, I kind of was like, I didn't really do the maths on it, but I was suspect. I was like, okay, what is everyone who's showing up bringing to the table? And literally what they're bringing is their flesh to their table, you know?
Yeah.
It was scary,
but, you know,
man.
It was such a nice soundtrack when they showed up to Terminus. That's how you know it's safe.
What was the soundtrack?
It was that be not so frigid, be not so frail or whatever. There's this like very happy kind of song when Glenn's group arrives at Terminus and there's all the flowers and
meat. Is
it
playing at Terminus or is it in the soundtrack of the show?
It's in the soundtrack of the show.
What's the word for that diegetic music? Is music that like isn't added later, it's in the scene or purports to be in the scene?
I don't know. I didn't know there was a word for it. That's cool though. I like that better.
I do too.
Because then it doesn't feel like you're being like it's not about manipulating the audience. It's about character development. You know, right?
At some point we should do a whole show on Blair Witch Project.
Okay, I'd have to rewatch it, but I would.
It's an important show. I actually interviewed the good looking guy, the tall guy. What's his name? Joshua. Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, that's his character's name and the actor's name. And I interviewed him in my book $30 Film School, and he was my neighbor in L.A., so I saw him around a lot. And I studied that movie very carefully because it came out around the time I started making independent films, and it was like the lowest budget movie ever, not the lowest budget movie ever, but the biggest discrepancy or like ratio between cost and, you know, it cost like $60,000 to make and it made like $243 million or something like that.
I bought that movie hook, line and sinker. I went to it opening night thinking that it was real.
Really?
Like, yes, absolutely. Because like, well, first off, I was a teenager, right? And so I was easily deceived. But they went through great length to make it seem that way. Like the website looked really legit.
To the point of like not letting the actors do any public appearances between the finishing of it and when it came out.
They also had a whole artifact display at the theater. Like you walked into the theater and there's like glass cases of like, here's the gloves they were wearing the night they went, you know what I mean? Like what?
Yeah. Well, that movie is very successful and very different than a lot of movies in a lot of ways. And one of the reasons is there's almost no music in it. The only music in it is diegetic. Like, there's no soundtrack. There's no dun dun dun. There's no what I call "Here Comes the Monster" music. You know,
right?
There's a lot of "Here Comes the Monster" music.
Which was terrifying.
I know. And the funny thing is, though, like there is a little music in that. Like, you know, somebody whistles or sings at some point, and when they're driving in Josh's car to pick up the other person. You know, he's playing some punk rock or something, but that's like the only music in it. It's diegetic only. But that show was so successful. That movie was so successful. They actually made and sold a soundtrack of the movie that had no music in it. And I really like what they came up with it. They called it Josh's Mixtape. And it was supposedly the tape he had in his car that you hear like a quarter of a song of.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It was like the police found this tape in his car and we made 1 million copies and sold them to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely a marketing win. I mean, like you couldn't come out of the movie thinking it was real, but like that was the tension with me the whole time watching it was like, at what point do I stop believing this is real?
It was the first movie that had scared me since I was a kid. Now, to be fair, I don't go to a lot of scary movies and I don't like scary movies. Oh, actually, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer was really scary to me. And it was a very low key horror movie. Did you see it?
I don't think so. It doesn't sound familiar.
The main character in it is played by the actor who plays Cletus or whatever, the older racist redneck in Walking Dead.
Okay.
What's Merle. His name? Merle. Yeah.
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 Cool.
Yep. It's.
I was into scary movies as a kid. I was like, maybe it's because I had an October birthday, but like, yeah, I used to spend my birthdays like, let's like do an all night every Freddy Krueger movie. Like, birthday.
Yeah. Well, I've always
liked the kind of kid I was.
I've always when I like horror movies, I don't like slasher violent people screaming movies. I like movies with a lot of psychodrama and suspense and very little screaming and psychodrama. I really don't like screaming at all for any reason in movies. Yeah. And that's another thing that I like about Breaking Bad or Walking Dead is there's not a lot of screaming. I mean, when people are eaten by zombies, but people don't scream at each other that much in it. And I like that.
It's all gravelly talking.
Yeah. But the scariest scene ever in a movie is in Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. And it's two people at a table talking. Talking about killing his mother. But yeah.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN or virtual private network from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Who's the redheaded soldier guy?
Abraham.
Yep. Abraham, Herschel, Noah. There are a lot of Old Testament names.
Pretty soon there will be Jesus.
You think?
No, I'm serious. In the comic book, there's a character named Jesus.
Is it Jesus?
Is it not Hispanic? Jesus. It is explicitly Jesus.
Wow.
So yeah, we're running out of prophets on The Walking Dead. I'm not sure how many more there could be.
Maybe there's, they could go to classic literature. Ishmael. Well, Ishmael's an Old Testament name too, but I'm thinking of the whale story. Call me Ishmael.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of classical literature characters are biblical names anyway. I mean, it's sort of a motif throughout, you know, at least European literature. A
lot of biblical names are out of style. I guess they're still like, you know, people call their kids Sarah and things like that. But yeah, the really archaic sounding ones are
Ezekiel. You've got to be Amish for a name like that.
Yeah. My wife and I both had a great aunt who lived with us, who was older than our parents, named Aunt Ida. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
That's an oldie name. I don't know if it's a biblical name, is it? I don't know. It's been so
Ida?
Long. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the vowels are right.
They only had 3 vowels in the time of the Old Testament. What are you saying?
No, I just mean like there are like, you know that it's not a biblical name if there's a P in it usually.
Huh.
Because Hebrew and Arabic both don't have P's, like Semitic languages don't have the letter P. So like Paul is not an Old Testament name. It's a New Testament name.
Yeah, but didn't people speak Aramaic in the time of Jesus and Greek?
Yeah.
And Greek? Like, isn't the Bible, wasn't it originally written in a language that wasn't the language it was spoken in? Which is one of the reasons there's all the mistranslations in the King James Version.
I don't know.
Although I don't want to open up that can of worms, because there are people who are so adamant about this version of the Bible over that version of the Bible that they make comic book nerds look sloppy and like they don't care about detail.
Well, you know, it's a very influential book.
Yep. It's a meme. You know, it's got the best copyright ever. The last word, the last part of the New Testament, the last paragraph of it, and I'm paraphrasing, which is a violation of this last paragraph, but it's basically something of he who takes away from the words in this book, so will God take away the promises of eternal life in this book, and he who adds to this book, so will God add to the torments described in this book. That is
wait a minute, is this Old Testament or New Testament?
Testament.
But the last book in the New Testament is the book of Revelation. So does that mean like the whole book cover to cover?
Or
does it mean like the book of Revelation?
Or just the acid trip that is the book of Revelations?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was acid, not like mescaline or something.
Yeah. Well,
it's a desert trip.
Probably Datura. It's probably, yeah, I don't know.
Or just malnutrition. Who knows?
book of Revelations is pretty wacky, man. That's Charles Manson was a big fan of that part of the Bible.
It's the fun one.
It's the fun one.
I mean, like if you're into horror, it's the one.
It does. It sounds like a Disney theme park designed by Bruegel and Bosch.
It's a little hard to follow. Like, I remember when I was a teenager and I was really trying to figure out like what are the four horsemen of the apocalypse? And I read through the chapter. I'm like, there's 5. No, wait, there's 3.
Well,
no, wait, there's like, it's so hard to figure
Charles
out.
Charles Manson said it was the Beatles.
But it reads like it's not clear what the 4 of them are, if that makes sense, which is unfortunate because people make characters out of them all the time.
And here at Freedom Fiends on our Signs of Evil countdown, number 7, Vanessa Williams. That's a Simpsons reference.
So what was your issue with Terminus?
It scared the heck out of me. That scene where they're about to be executed and turned into meat is really scary. And it kind of,
it's cringeworthy.
Yeah. The DJ and I called it the Long Pig Slaughterhouse. Long Pig is an old World War One name from Africa. It was what the English translation of eating human flesh. They called it Long Pig.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I think that's still the common phrase for, you know, people into that sort of thing.
It also brought up this like conspiracy theory that I've heard that I don't know if there's any basis to, but that, you know, FEMA has stockpiled a bunch of guillotines. You ever heard that one?
I have heard that.
Yeah. It just seemed like, I don't know. It seemed very government-y to me, the whole Terminus.
Because it was so meticulous.
If you want a vision of expanding government forever, picture Terminus.
Worms.
It's been a good show, Davi, and I've had fun with the trilogy. We will discuss zombies again in the future. We're not done, but it's not going to be all zombies all the time after this week.
Nope.
Till the next season comes.
The topic is not dead. It's merely sleeping until it rises again.
On the third day. No, on the third month. Whenever the next season comes out, we'll do another week of all zombies all the time.
Cool.
Cool, man. Worms.
Worms.